This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome back to episode 526, recorded on December 5th, 2017. This is Wells Tech, a show about technology and ministry, where we give you a little bit of news, a little bit of instruction, hopefully, some community feedback, and hopefully some stuff that you can take and implement in your ministries, whether that be personal or professional. And I don't do that alone. In fact, I don't do most of it. The real star on the stage, Sally Draper. Happy Advent, Sally.
Well, thank you, sir. I got a couple of Happy New Years at church on Sunday. I thought that was a neat way to welcome the new church year and welcome December and a Wells Tech topic. There's all kinds of new things happening.
Yep. We're going to be up your way next week. I forgot to tell you that. Midterm graduation. My nephew, Jonathan, is graduating, so we'll be in your neck of the woods. I think the graduation's on Thursday morning, I want to say. So turn the snow off. crank the heat up, please.
Yeah, we just turned it on yesterday, so seeing a white world out there, times have changed, but that's okay. It's about time. We had it good while it lasted. So,
yeah. I'm rather excited about this show, Sally. We are starting a new month, and for our Wells Tech months, this church year, I guess we could call it, we've been taking a theme into each month, and we've had some good times in previous months, but I really like any time where we talk about planning, and that's our topic, at least a piece of our topic for the month of December. It's probably a good time because you're thinking of the new year and plans are put together. Good time to not just make resolutions, but kind of put down in black and white, so to speak, what you might be doing ministry-wise as well. So I'm excited about that topic. I'm also excited about my pick and some discoveries I've made over the past week about certain technologies. So little tease there.
All this excitement. Wow. Well, I'm excited too, Martin. I have mentioned multiple times on the show that I work with the local resale shop. It's called Treasure House, and we support Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School as well as other nonprofits in Wells and ELS. And we've just been blessed beyond measure. It's been a wonderful experience to be part of the board, and we moved into a new location, and God has really blessed our efforts, and that's wonderful. But one of the things that we continually struggle with is planning, actually, because our board members typically stay on the board for a while, but it takes us a while to get up to speed, and we've had new managers and different changes at Treasure House. And even if things were to stay the same, there's always more to plan for. There's always new things, and, you know, even if there is consistency among the people involved. And so I'd really like for us as a board to kind of attack 2018 with a vision of the whole year, not just going to board meetings and reacting to, oh my goodness, we're behind, we need to catch up and do these things or whatever. And so I kind of introduced that concept in our last meeting, and it reminded me of when my husband was serving in a parish, and that same kind of feeling there, that we wanted to get that big picture. And I had actually gone through the process of trying to document all the things that happened in our church and school, all the events, all the worship services, all the activities, administrative activities, conferences, anything that's going on throughout the year. And I actually worked initially in a website format, and you know, just kind of reminded myself of that as I was thinking about our Treasure House challenges in particular, that I had a page with events for every single month of the year, And then some events were more like monthly events. They recurred every month or quarterly or whatever it may be. But just kind of going through that process of writing everything down. What time are the Holy Week services typically? And, you know, just the kind of things you have to remember over and over again. And so this was, you know, quite a while ago now that I put together this website kind of version of this. And you and I tossed around these ideas and wrestled with them a little, and we kind of came to the conclusion that there's probably better tools to do that kind of thing with.
Yep, the church and the school can be very cyclical, event-driven organizations, and not to say that there's new things that don't come up each and every year, but many of the things you don't want to have to reinvent the wheel, or you don't want that kind of thing floating around in the back of your head thinking, well, I guess I ought to get on that. When did we start doing that? And what kind of effort and, you know, even budgets and plans and what did we learn from last year? Lots of, I think, room for organization, strategic planning, or tools that we're going to talk about today that can help that quite a bit. And you don't have to go through much of a year-long cycle to recognize it. Hey, this is a real time saver.
Yeah, and you know, just the way you described it just now means that it's not just one person's responsibility either. It's something that you need to be able to collaborate easily on, as different people have different input on different types of projects that are happening. And, you know, that big picture is enhanced when more people can be involved. I think about just the simplicity of having weekly worship. And there are ushers and altar guild and organists and musicians and choirs and all these things that you have to coordinate just for one worship service. And you do that over and over and over again throughout the year. And so just having that big picture and having a place to see it all and make it all come together. And then hopefully your planning becomes a lot more proactive. So if we are meeting today, Martin, to plan, we're not worried about what's happening in this Sunday service. We're looking at the next 3 months and the events that are going to be happening then and what kind of advertising might be involved or social media posts might be involved or newsletter articles or who needs to be involved and how do we get the ball rolling on things in the future so that we're a lot more proactive.
Right. I bet that not even long-term listeners, but even short-timers will know what tool we're going to recommend as a solution to this whole planning process that we're going to be talking about. And that is our good friend Trello. We've made it a ministry pick of the week or a ministry resource. We've talked about it in different contexts. We even, I think, included it in our book from a couple years ago. And it's near and dear to our heart because we use it day in and day out. And it is our planning tool of choice for our work here at the Synod office, at the CMM. But also, I think in many respects, it's our personal planning tool of choice as well.
Yeah, definitely. So that old-timey website that I had set up and had as an example to kind of drive my vision of this got updated and turned into a Trello board. And it's actually a Trello board that we've made public. So if you head over to wellstech.wells.net, you can actually go to the board, see the board, and if you have a Trello account or if you choose to create a free Trello account, you can make a copy of the board and use it as something to guide your efforts in doing something similar. So maybe just kind of walk through a little bit of the organization of it. And the main things, I think, are the first few columns where we have something we call...
to kind of describe what a Trello board is for our listeners who may not be familiar with Trello. Maybe start with square one. What's the concept? What's the paradigm that we're trying to, you know, that Trello is trying to use?
Very good, Martin. I think you're absolutely right. And what they have basically is list and then things to do within lists. So everything is organized into a particular list. Our lists, to start with, are whiteboard, look ahead, in progress, and done. So if I had the task of coordinating the Unity Sunday worship, it might be in the look ahead as it's approaching and we're, you know, preparing for it. And then the in progress as we're actually in that month that it's happening. And then when it's done, it gets moved over to the done column, of course. And maybe we add a new card, a new task to represent it for next year. So it goes into the calendar right away for the year that's coming up, and you don't lose all those notes and things that you made on this year. So kind of a flow to it, that you have these cards, they're called, that represent your task, and they're pretty short. They have a title, they show a due date, things like that, but then you can click on them and they flip over and you see a lot more information. So
yeah, one of the neat things about an electronic tool like this is that it can aggregate or bring together almost everything that you would potentially need to manage or to plan for a project. So you know, you've got checklists, you can collaborate and have comments, you can insert pictures, you can insert documents that can be downloaded or uploaded. You can take notes. You can add deadlines or timelines. And this whole Trello system has developed its own little ecosystem where people have added, or developers have added, kind of functional add-ons. So where you can add custom fields, for instance, or different things that make it more useful. And so that's one of the advantages of kind of a digital tool, where it can kind of grow over time and can meet your needs. And if it doesn't meet your exact need, there might be an add-on or what they call power-ups that can do that for you, that can get you the rest of the way.
Yep. One of those power-ups that becomes super valuable in this kind of usage is something called the calendar. Pretty basic, but when you add those due dates to cards, then they are associated with a date on your calendar, and your calendar becomes this amazing visual. As I, in our sample, added due dates to things that span throughout the year. And so you can look at your calendar and see all those big events and activities of the church year that are coming up in the months ahead. So calendar's one I think you don't want to live without in terms of power-ups, especially for this date-centric vision of the work of your congregation.
Yeah, it gives you that bird's eye view and lets you kind of get that vision again for whatever time period it is that you're looking ahead. So some organizations like that 3 month or 6 month, or some even do an entire year. So to be able to visualize it like that is real important. So what else, how else are we organizing? I'll see if you were to describe this for the busy church secretary, Sally, what's kind of a day in the life of a Trello system like?
Well, certainly you have the things that you're working on currently, and you can use tags on those. So maybe some of them are newsletter worthy, where you're expecting an article to come in and be included in the newsletter. You can kind of put a visual newsletter tag on those, so they're easy to pick out. If you are just building your whole year, you can organize the things that aren't happening currently into a different list, like events or group-based events, school worship, recurring events. So you have those kind of sitting in the backlog, waiting for your attention as the dates roll around. But again, you can put dates on those and have them all show up on your calendar, even though they aren't in your current in-progress list that you're working on.
So let's talk maybe a little bit higher level. Things that I would ask if I were kind of sitting down and planning with a tool like this is, you know, where do you start? You know, do you start with, you know, like you did, where you try and get every single thing down? Do you meet with different people and try and poll everybody? Do you, you know, kind of bring everybody together at once and say, hey, we're going to, let's throw everything at it. Where would you recommend, you know, an organization start? You had a kind of a unique scenario. You were the pastor's wife, and you were involved in different ministries, but that may not be the case in every organization, and some organization may be a lot larger, right?
Right. You know, obviously when my husband started in the congregation, we knew very little of the structure. We relied on the office staff and board of elders and different boards and things to kind of guide us through what was normal. But I think what became obvious right away was we needed to document, like I said, just what is the Holy Week schedule. Or at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, they would worship 1 year on New Year's Eve and the next year on New Year's Day. You know, so what is that? On odd years, you do it this way, or on even years, you do it that way, or however you set up your standards for different events and activities and things. So beginning to document, even if it's all in your head right now, but writing it down on these cards is just a real pleasing activity, I think. I certainly would suggest taking a look at the sample board that we've put together, and maybe that would give you enough to get started, just modifying the things that are here, or making your own that's kind of parallel to what's here on the sample board. It represents things like weddings in the congregation, or community events, or, you know, different pastor conferences or whatever. There's a good sampling here of all types of activities, and that would probably be enough to jog your memories and stuff.
Okay. We'll talk more about this next week, because I think there's some good use cases we can walk through and get people comfortable with the concept. But I think in general, the way I would work it is just plan on doing this over the course of a year and build it up. You know, don't expect that you're going to kind of be out of the gates, you know, have the board that that we've got as an example. I mean, I think it'd be great for people to take a look at this, but everybody's going to be a little bit different, of course. So, you know, give it time, but be intentional about it, I think, is probably the best advice.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from there, build in how you work with the items and things like that. Some of the things that we're going to cover next week, how you work a card through the look ahead to in progress to done, and move new things into your look ahead
card. Yeah, one of the neat things about Trello is you can do it kind of however you want. There's not one structured way. I think it's got an advantage over maybe something like Basecamp or some of the other tools that we've talked about, which are a little bit more refined and structured. This is a little more free form, and you kind of meld it to your needs. And it's a very visually, not only appealing application, but rewarding as you see things, you know, again, move across the, you know, the horizon. So mm-hmm. I like the paradigm. So,
yep.
All right. So we've got our start on planning. And again, we will take a look at it one more time next week as we wrap up our conversation about strategic planning for the church or school. All right, Sally. You'd think that this time of year would be a little bit slow news for technology, but that's not the case. There's been actually quite a bit of news lately, hasn't there?
Yeah, starting with a major security flaw that was revealed last week for the Mac operating system.
Yeah, it came a little late. Our security focus was last month, but
exactly. I think it was like right after we had wrapped up those shows. But they have an operating system called High Sierra now. I want to say it's version 9 something.
Yeah, it's 10 something.
10 something. There you go. And what it allowed was someone to, if they had physical access to your computer, to log in as root without any kind of password.
10.13.
Wow.
We're close.
What a kind of give away the farm, you know. I mean, they don't even have to be that smart to be able to log in without a password and have root access to your operating system. So Apple very quickly released a patch for it. It's sitting in your security updates. If you haven't patched yet, highly recommend that you do. Their instructions were install this update as soon as possible. So definitely want to watch out who logs into your computer if you haven't installed it yet, and then make sure you get that patch in place.
I think Apple actually forces it now. It was so important that they don't even give you a choice, that all of a sudden, because it doesn't require a reboot.
Yeah, so. I actually had a different experience, Martin, and I had to go look for it based on this article's instructions and install it myself.
Mine just happened.
So. Yeah, so, yeah, they were more worried about you than they were me, apparently.
Exactly. some flaws are, you know, very obscure and, you know, unlikely to be used and they're very narrow. There's a very narrow surface where somebody could actually use them for malicious whatever. This one was not the case. This is about as bad a flaw as a computer can have, where somebody who has physical access, or even if they had remote access through something like VNC, and could get a login screen on your computer, could actually execute this flaw and gain what, like we mentioned, call root access, which is kind of the keys to the kingdom, and with one simple command could erase your hard disk. So not a good thing.
Not a good thing, yeah. All right, and then there was an article in Wired about Facebook and their new target audience, apparently.
Breaking news, yeah, sub-13-year-olds. As we know, there is, in the terms of service, nobody, is it 13? Nobody under 13 is really allowed on Facebook by the rules. But now Facebook has created a Facebook Messenger, which we've talked about in the past, kind of an instant communications tool, a chat tool for, I think the age range they suggest is, what, 8 to 13, something like that.
Yeah.
You need parental permission, and the parents can obviously have access, 6 to 12, I guess it is, called Messenger Kids. And so what do you think of this, Sally?
Well, just like the people in the article, I think they're going into some pretty dangerous territory there, actually trying to get kids perhaps hooked or buying into their Facebook ecosystem before even age 13. So obviously, you know, parental consent is required, and you want to make the parents responsible, but why would Facebook have this application if it weren't for trying to get some kids on their accounts and stuff? So
right.
Kind of odd to go that young.
Right. And they're clearly going to be collecting data, as they do on all of us too. So there's intelligence that they're gaining, even if it's anonymized data about our kids. So, you know, I'd be careful with something like that. It may sound cool, and your kids may be all, you know, all thumbs up on it, because now they've got a way to communicate and on their devices. But I guess I would just be a little bit careful with the, see how it goes. Don't jump right in. See what the experience of others might be, and then go from there. If you need if you want to provide your kids with some kind of application that provides instant messaging or chat, there are other tools. In fact, very private and secure ones that you may want to consider over something like Messenger for Kids. I think one of them is called Signal. I think it's signal.org. If you just search for Signal Chat or Signal Messenger, you'll come up with a kind of a secure chat tool that could be used. It's a very private, encrypted technology that a lot of people like to use if they want to be totally off the grid, so to speak. So, and there are other tools like that too. So I'm a little leery of where this is going. I'm just going to kind of step back and see what happens here. But it's definitely not surprising that Facebook is doing this. Clearly, we know, you know, what their motives might be, and who knows what advertising goes in there and such. So,
I just found it, signal.org. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
Okay,
good recommendation.
All right, that's our news and tech segment. There's also news on the Wells front, and it is Christmas season, so there's a concert coming up.
Yep, Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary's annual Christmas concert will be held this coming weekend, December 10th. If you're able to be on campus, it will be at 3 or 7 p.m., same concert at both times. So just get over to their auditorium, and probably recommend getting there early because they typically have a large crowd for this wonderful concert. They will also be streaming live the 3 p.m. service, so we'll include a link to their website so you can watch the live stream if you aren't able to be there in person.
Very good. That is, all of our schools have super well done concerts. They have great leadership. They have great voices. They spend a lot of time practicing. The content is obviously top notch, so it's well worth the time. If you can go there in person, great. If you can't, streaming is second best. So, Sally, I think it's time for our picks of the week.
Yep, and I'm very excited to share my pick of the week just because I think it's a really cool idea. So I was out in the social space over the weekend, and one of the Instagram accounts that we follow on our Wells Tech Instagram account is Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Rockford, Michigan. And just noticed that they have a super cool Advent devotional series, which they started December 1st, and it involves it involves their nativity scene, their church nativity scene. What they did was, leading up to December 1st, they shared a picture of their church nativity scene. I was finding it on Instagram, but it's shared on their website and their Facebook page as well. And it basically said, fun time setting up the nativity again this year, but it appears someone is missing. And if you look at the picture, you can see Joseph and Mary and baby Jesus, or a place for baby Jesus, and shepherds and animals. And there's a couple of wise men and camels, but only two wise men. And they have hashtag, well, where's Melchior? which apparently is one of the names of one of the wise men. And then they have other pictures on their Instagram account with Melchior showing up in various locations around their area. For instance, someone spotted him at the airport curbside, hoping he's finding his way to the nativity. If you see him, point him in the right direction. And then they have links to devotional content that goes along with all the different places that their Melchior wise men is showing up around the area there. There's one where he's near someone who's fishing. So they have a devotion about Christ and fishing for men, that kind of thing. And so really neat Advent series. They have it on the front page of their website, and you can get right to the different devotional materials that they've posted, and a prayer for the day and that kind of thing. So I just really take my hat off to them for coming up with the hashtag, where's Melchior, and setting up this whole series of Advent devotions for this month of December. So kudos to you guys at Christ Our Savior in Rockford, Michigan.
Now, are they directing them to a living nativity, or is it just a static?
It's a an outdoor.
It is display.
It's not a living nativity. It's
that would be even cooler.
Yeah, that's a good idea too. So
I like it. Very creative. Nice job.
Very creative.
Yeah. All right, my pick is up, and actually I'm going to combine my pick with my ministry resource. I wrote a ministry resource blog post called The State of Chromebooks in the Office. And I had one of the, I don't know if I had the original Chromebook, that was that black one that everybody hated, but it wasn't too long after that I got and I don't know what model this is, Samsung. I could read you the digits here, but it's the A01US. Pretty typical. It's the white one. They made a black one like this. And it wasn't bad. I would say for as far as Chromebooks go, it was actually pretty good. And it was fairly inexpensive. And it was kind of the prototypic, this is This is kind of what you get when you do a Chromebook. But I was really excited when news came out not too long ago that Android apps were going to be able to be used on Chromebooks, which kind of is a little bit of a game changer, because before that you're kind of limited to whatever could run in a browser. Apps bring, you know, some local capabilities, maybe a little bit better performance, some things that and a wider set of things that you can do. So I was excited to try that out. Unfortunately, since this Chromebook is so old, they don't work on this. They only work on quote-unquote modern Chromebooks. So I wanted to do some testing with one, so I picked up another one, a recent one, and this is my pick, by the way, as well. This is the Acer, happens to be white as well, the Acer R11 Chromebook. And this I am really impressed with. First of all, it is a the screen goes 360, so it can be, you can set it up in tent mode, you can do it in tablet mode. It's a touch screen. You could guess from the R11 title that it is 11 inches, so it's not super big. I'd say the resolution is fine. I wouldn't say it's Retina resolution. It's not going to compete with an iPad, for instance, but it's really solid. Keyboard is awesome. Trackpad is awesome. Speed and performance is awesome. The price tag is great. $299 was this little guy. It's got USB 2 and USB 3. It has an SD card slot. It has a headphone jack. It has an HDMI slot. 10 hours of battery life. Just, I think, a super value. And one of the reasons I wanted to try it out was, well, let's see how the Wells mobile app reacts on it, which it runs fine. But also to kind of test whether this is something that you could use is as an office replacement. We talk a lot about Chromebooks as being good for one-to-one computing in a classroom, but we've kind of backed off and been shied away a little bit from saying, well, they can work in the school or church office for a faculty member or a church or school secretary or pastor. And I've come around with, especially looking at devices like this, and you throw in the ability to add apps in, especially like Microsoft apps, where you can open up a bona fide Word doc, you can use Outlook, Excel, PowerPoint, anything that has an Android app, you can run, on this, just like it were an Android tablet or an Android phone. Good performance, and the experience here, I think, is excellent. So, I came away from the whole project very impressed. For under $300, and you can find these on sale for cheaper than that even, but for under $300, you can get a very functional computing device that you can work with offline, because Chromebooks now can do that. You can get all the apps you want. You're not giving anything up with, in my opinion, the monitor, or the screen, or the keypad, or the trackpad. The speakers on this are pretty good. Just a kind of a no compromise solution. So I think that's great news for the church or school office. If you're thinking about trying to economize a little bit, but still get all the functionality. They're more secure. We've talked about that in the past as well. They can go under the Chrome management console, so you can limit what apps go on here. I give it two thumbs up. I think it was, I think it's a great value. It's be practicing good stewardship if you went this route, in my opinion. Now, there are still some of the downsides we've talked about. Video editing is still something that you're going to have to maybe use cloud services for, that kind of thing. But I would say those negative conversations about what the Chromebook can't do are fewer and further between. So that is the Acer R11 and my ministry resource, if you want to kind of read up on my impressions on its fit for the modern day church or school office, take a look at the blog post. I include a video there that has somebody else talking about maybe its fitness for different scenarios other than just the classroom. Having said that, this would be a great classroom computer too. It strikes me as pretty sturdy. You know, they start right up. There's a lot of advantages to having these in classrooms. So that's my pick and my ministry resource for the week.
Okay. You didn't mention much about hard drive space. Is it a solid state drive?
Yeah, it's solid state. I think it's only 32.
Okay.
But it's expandable because you do have the USB ports and you do have the SD card slot too. So you could make it larger. But that was one of the points I made in the article too. I store almost nothing locally anymore. It's all in cloud services, and then I just bring down what I'm going to need if I'm traveling or if I'm not going to be online. So,
good point.
Yeah, I think this one's 32. I think you can get up to 64, but in my mind, not a big deal.
Okay. Yeah, my son just recently got a new computer, and it only had 128 gig drive. It was a Surface book, and so he bought a little external drive to go along with that, so he'd have more storage and stuff. But then he was talking to his dad, and he said, "Well, how much storage do you have on your new phone?" And his dad said, "128 gig." Right. He's like, "Your phone has the same amount of storage as my computer." So you know, storage, it's
yeah. One of your sons, I remember, did get a Chromebook. Was it this? Yep. Was it this model or no?
No, he has an Asus Flip, and actually my older son does too. They love their Chromebooks for school. That's, you know, they were pretty much in the mode of having a pretty heavy duty, either a big boat anchor laptop or a desktop for their gaming purposes, because, you know, you want to have lots of power and video capabilities and things for gaming. And so they're totally hooked on carrying the lightweight Chromebook with them to college classes and stuff. That's been a real win. But now my older son is getting ready for seminary next year, and he needs to be able to install Logos. So the Chromebook's not going to cut it there at SIM because of the Logos, although I know a lot of it is available online through the cloud.
Yep.
But the actual software is a local install.
I think so. Cool. All right, Sally, we should probably get to our community feedback section. I found a couple articles I wanted to share. One was kind of related to that Mac, that High Sierra root bug that was recently patched one way or the other. It's an article entitled, let me pull it up here quickly for those of you that are watching along at home. Is this it? How to use Terminal on the Mac when you have no idea where to start. So one of the fixes to this bug was to actually go into Terminal and enter some commands. The best way to describe Terminal on a Mac is if you're more than a few years into computers, you may remember DOS on your PC. That's basically what Terminal provides on a Mac. The operating system behind Mac is Unix, so it has a whole command set. And there are certain things that you can only do in Terminal and not through applications. One of the things that I do on my Mac fairly regularly on Terminal is to show hidden files. It's really hard to find the way to show those hidden files, and sometimes you need those, or you want to get rid of them or clear them or even edit them sometimes, and by default your Mac kind of shields you from that. So Terminal and the Terminal commands are the way to do that. And this article this article talks you through what the Terminal is, basic commands you should know, talks about paths and how to move between different sections of your operating system, and how to change passwords and all kinds of stuff that may come in handy if you get into computing at all. These are the only ways to do some of those commands. So I thought that was an article worth sharing. Also wanted to share an article which has really nothing to do with computers, but if you are a podcaster or any kind of public speaker, the article is from Lifehacker entitled, How Can I Avoid Filler Words Like When I Talk? Like that. You have to kind of read this article to appreciate the fact that there are some things that you can do to get those uhs and ums out of your speech, but it's not easy. Things like pause before you speak, or relax, slow down, listen to yourself, record yourself, practice, practice, practice. And actually, the some of the discussion that goes on underneath or responses to the article gives some other good resources as well. But this would be something that anybody in a public speaking role, whether you're in a classroom or in a pulpit or a podcaster, would be a good read. This is an older article, and there are some newer ones out there as well, but just kind of a good reminder that, hey, pay attention to this.
And so I'm just curious if there was any physician heal thyself kind of motivation behind that article, since I know I say like 2 jillion times every time I podcast. Sorry, folks, the bad habit to break.
There was a time very early on in our podcasting days where I was tempted to go in and clean all our ums up, and I gave up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
it's just part of the deal, but doesn't mean you shouldn't stop trying.
That's right. That's right. Good motivation. One more community feedback from Ryan Rosenthal, Martin.
Yeah, let me share screen once again. And Ryan over on the Wells Google Schools board shared a blog post from Computer World called 40 Chromebook Tips for Maximum Productivity. I thought it was fitting, as we were talking about Chromebooks, that we share this as well. Supercharge your Chrome OS experience with these time-saving tricks and techniques. And they start from very basic, like getting around the operating system, to managing apps and Windows, some things I'd never really even knew were possible on a Chromebook, navigating the web, managing files, simplifying security, embracing system tools, breaking down boundaries. There's all kinds of good stuff in this article, 40 of them. So take advantage of what Ryan has shared there.
Yeah, thanks for sharing, Ryan. He's over at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Appreciate your contributions always. I had a couple of things that I wanted to share in community feedback as well. One of them goes back to our topic for last month of security. So I can figure out how to share my screen now. I will share an article called You Posted What? A Facilitator Guide. So this lady is a school teacher, and she recently did a TED Talk or a TEDx talk on online postings and protecting your self in social media and things like that. And she recommends that it might be something that you would watch with students. And then she's made a facilitator guide to have students discuss the concepts with you to reflect and think about their online behavior and what it means in their future and things like that. So I think she makes some really great points, just a perfect follow-up. And actually, it's branded with Common Sense Education, which was my ministry resource last week, where we have lots of great information on digital citizenship and such. So check it out if you are particularly teaching maybe 7th and 8th grade on up. It might be something for you to discuss with your students, and the discussion guide is really great. She has it in PDF format, so you can download it easily. So check it out. Nice. And then I heard from a friend of mine, Tom Rosenau, his principal in Bloomer, Wisconsin. He actually sent me a cute picture of his daughter with a computer keyboard and some kind of screen in front of her, and said that was happening now at their home. And I didn't quite know what it was, but I learned that it was Kano computer kit 2017, where children as young as six can build their own computer. It's got a Raspberry Pi in it and its own operating system and stuff. They build the computer and then they learn to code it. And so it comes along with a drag and drop coding environment similar to Scratch, and also the ability to code something that looks a lot like Minecraft. So they can actually hack Minecraft and make it do its own thing. So looks like a really neat investment, and his kids were doing it, and so they've got experience. Maybe we'll have to have Tom on sometime to tell us a little bit more about it. Price tag is $149.99, ships in 1 to 2 days, so there's plenty of time to get one for Christmas if you want to experiment with it yourself or gift one to your child. Check out Kano. Kano.me is where you find the information.
Oh, yes. Very nice. Thank you, Tom. Hey, he's my friend too, you know.
Yes, it's true.
Let's move on to our video of the week.
And we just want to replay the beautiful Martin Luther College Christmas concert. Happened this past weekend, and we'll include a link in the show notes to where you can watch the concert. 2 solid hours of amazing music that happened at the Chapel of Christ on Saturday and Sunday. And if you weren't able to be there in person or you just want to relive the experience, you can find it on Wells Tech. So check it out.
We've already teased what's coming up next week, more planning, but we're going to get real practical and do a walkthrough, a step-by-step of how we might take an event and some of the tools that we could apply to that to not just plan it, but then also kind of capture data around it and useful for, you know, the next time it comes around too. So stay tuned for that, and I'm looking forward to that as well. If you want to contribute to the show, we would love it if you would decide to do that. If you go to wellstech.wells.net, across the top, upper right, and you hear me say this each and every week because the invitation is open each and every week, lots of social media opportunities. We have Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter and Digo and Pinterest and Instagram, and there's a listserv, or we call it Google Group, I should say. There's good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, and, of course, voicemail. So there is no shortage of ways to contribute to the show, ask a question, make a comment. We'd be happy to have you do that. So join the conversation and be part of Wells Tech episode 527. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a blessed week, and we will talk to you next week.